Hey, it's Dan Bova from Entrepreneur, and thanks for joining me for this episode of How Success Happens. I want to get right to today's guest because, holy cow, this guy is awesome. Four-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Stephon Diggs. Now, he's not only one of the most talented players in the NFL, he's also one of the most stylish. The Houston Texans star launched his own fashion line, Liam Home, which has been celebrated in the pages of Vogue and other high fashion magazines. I got to sit down with Stephon to talk about the launch of his line, how he taps into creativity, how he overcomes obstacles, and what it feels like to get tackled by a 300-plus pound man. Spoiler alert, doesn't feel great. But Stephon was so thoughtful and had so many great tips to offer really anyone who's looking to do anything big and exciting in their life. So I hope you will enjoy this. I really enjoyed talking with him. Let's get right to it, Mr. Stephon Diggs. You look great.
Thank you so much. It's halfway decent, as my mom would like to say, but I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
So how do you think of yourself these days? NFL great, fashion founder, or are they one and the same?
Right now, I try to keep it as modest as possible, as humble as possible. I go into everything I do real confidently.
So when did the fashion bug bite you? Has it been something that's always been in your life? Was football and fashion always two things competing for your attention, or did one come first?
My mom would tell you, I like to bring up my mom because that's one of the only people that can tell you these stories from when I was young, but I had a pair of cowboy boots when I was like 4 years old that I couldn't come off of, that I used to wear in the summertime. I think that's around the time I started having a love for, you know, clothing and shoes and, you know, kind of wanting to wear what I want to wear. And my mom never really dressed me for school. She kind of let me do my thing too. So that kind of went in the same. And then I started playing football when I was 5 years old. So I guess they kind of happened simultaneously. And I had a love and true passion for football. I watched my older brother play football. I watched, you know, countless athletes that I kind of looked up to as a kid. Played a sport. I had a love for the game when I was young. And it grew as I got older, but I always kind of had a distant like mindset of like I'm going in the NFL. It was like a thing in the back of my mind that I knew what I was going to do. I was destined to do. I always wanted to do. And I felt like my path was going to kind of align with the things that I wanted.
When the moment comes in your life where you go from, you know, being the kid who loves those cowboy boots and loves fashion, to being someone who's going to launch a fashion line. Like, how did that decision happen?
I guess it was a long process for me, considering I've been a consumer for a long time, as we all have. I've been buying clothes for a long time. My shopping addiction, or my habit, if you may, I would like to say, I refer to it as research and development. If you ask my financial advisor, I tell him it's a lot of R&D going on. But over the past couple of years, I really started taking it serious. Like, I wanted to kind of start my own brand. And then after buying the same white shirt multiple times and buying things, the same denim jacket, I have like at least like 8 denim jackets that I hold near and dear to my heart. But it's like, okay, at what point do I start to take in consideration, can I make those things? I started looking into fabrics. I started to really dive into it a little deeper.
So the brand name is Liam. What does that stand for, and what's the kind of vibe of Liam?
So if you look up the name Liam, it means honest. The second portion of it is om, and that's man. And, you know, I kind of pride myself in being an honest man, for the most part, if you may. I try not to tell any lies, actually, but I wanted to build a product that was honest and, you know, was honest with the consumer about what it was getting, and really meet them where they are.
So your shirts, a lot of them have slogans on them.
Yeah.
I need a hug. What's the other one?
They are watching us. Yes. Definitely. And I think another one is, I've decided I don't like you anymore.
Right. So where do these slogans come from? Is there stuff that strikes you and you write it down? Like, where did that come from?
I'm a big note taker. Like, I feel like anything that's on my brain or anything that's on my mind, I write it in my notes. Sometimes I don't necessarily physically write it because we have handy dandy iPhones these days. I like to put things in my notes, and I like to use them as reminders. But those shirts and those slogans really are like reflections of moments I've had, or like just just I was in the bed when I made I Needed a Hug shirt. I felt like I was a, it was a cloudy day in upstate New York, and I wasn't feeling too well, but something told me like, damn, I need a hug. And then I wrote it down and kind of got with the person I worked with on my clothes, my CEO. I said, I actually want to make I Need a Hug shirt. She said, okay, let's do it. Next thing you know, a month or two later, the shirt sold out, and I guess a lot of people need a hug.
So, as you know, in your college career, and you know, you've had some pretty tough injuries that you've had to overcome, and I'm guessing you've had some, you know, mental, you know, obstacles that you've had to overcome. You know, do you deal with those in the same way? Do you have a kind of path that you like to follow when you're dealing with an obstacle?
It's kind of crazy because football, you're gonna have to emotionally detach yourself and somewhat physically detach yourself from your mind. You go through a lot physically on a consistent basis. And I think it's crazy because, I mean, people that go to the gym on a consistent basis, you're literally going into the gym to somewhat kind of put yourself through something that's not comfortable. But in the ability to grow is coming from discomfort. Like when you're uncomfortable, you start growing. You're going in the right direction that you would appreciate. But football is it's just a different kind of game. You know, mentally it kind of prepares you for a lot of things that I feel like every kid should play some kind of sport growing up, just so you can kind of experience wins, losses, falling short, adversity, just little things that you kind of will experience in life. And life is a lot worse at times. The older you get, the more we go through. I mean, the lack of responsibility you have as a kid, you can at least have those foundational pieces of falling short in certain areas or working at something, getting better at things. And it kind of turn you into the work world where you can kind of not only just manifest things, but work to make things happen. Like, I'm a big manifester. Like, I believe I can get the things that I really and truly want. And that's just not, that just doesn't come with like a dream. It comes with hard work. So I feel like how I handle it personally, I like to detach myself from my emotions at times just because I feel like you don't get a lot done when you're emotional. I feel like when you're emotionally driven, you might make a bad decision here and there. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with mistakes, but I feel like I make the most sound decision when I'm thinking rational.
So how is it? How do you think rationally when you're going up for a catch and you know what's about to hit you?
That's that emotional detachment. That's that mental detachment that I talk about. Just because, like, you know what's on the other end of it. But the bigger outcome is, like, that's the foundational piece is when I catch the ball and I know I'm going to get hit. Did I accomplish the goal? Did I do my job? Did I do what I'm destined to do or what I'm designed to do in that specific play? And if you come up with the catch, it's amazing. If you don't, people are going to have some things to say about it. But if you're better off just catching it, you're going to get hit anyway. So
I want to talk a little bit about mentorship and leadership because, you know, as we know, sadly, your father passed away when you were really young and you were put in a leadership role in your home. You know, what does being a good leader or being a good mentor mean to you?
It means damn near everything to me at this point in my life. It kind of showed me that losing my father very young, my little brother was younger than me, that learning how to sacrifice as a young man, when you learn how to sacrifice for the greater good, for your family, and kind of teaches you those things that life teaches you. And sacrifice, and by sacrifice, I mean like I stayed home for college. I could have went to schools all across the country. I stayed home. I wanted to be closer to my mom, to my little brothers. I felt like it was pivotal for their success and their future that I was closer to home. And leadership for me kind of just pivotal, and it showed me that life is kind of designed in a way where you're put here for a reason. You know what I'm saying? My reason was bigger than myself at that point. I lost my father. That was my best friend at the time. And losing your best friend is hard. You know what I'm saying? Losing your father is obviously harder, but that was my best friend at the time, and I kind of learned how to not lean so much on other people. And that's why, like, kind of like looking inward is always like a big thing for me. That's why I'm always accountable. That's why I'm always pushing in the right direction. That's why I'm always trying to be the best I can be, not only for me, but the people around me. So,
well, speaking of your little brother, I know you've never played against each other professionally, but can he cover you?
We had this conversation since we were children. I feel like we've been going at it for a very long time. I think this year is going to be our first time actually having some interaction. We almost had it last year.
Yeah.
He got a little banged up throughout the season, but it's going to be the first year that we get to see each other. And I feel like it's going to be a nice little battle of Texas. Hopefully it happens on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So I can talk a lot of trash afterwards, you know what I'm saying, while I eat my turkey, of course. But we'll see. But to answer your question, not on this good day. I would have said bad day, but not even on a good day.
We all want the best of both. Dessert without calories, luxury without expense. And how about security without passwords? With Okta, it's possible. We secure identity for your business so you can safely use any technology. You can build experiences that are richer and more secure. Grow revenue without running up costs and scale easily, no matter your tech stack. Enjoying the best of both? It's possible. It's Okta. Okta, the world's identity company.
So many of us, we have ideas. Oh, this would be so great. Someone should do this. Yeah. Someone should do that. But how do you get yourself to like make that step, to push yourself forward, to get the idea out of your head and into reality? What's your first steps for that?
Spending time with yourself. I feel like COVID created more entrepreneurs than the past 10 years. Mm. And sometimes financial, obviously. You know what I'm saying? I feel like if you have a desire to do something or you're having a thought to do something, just do it. And it's easy to say that. For me, it took me 3 years, a lot of research and development, as I say, a lot of R&D.
Right.
But if you have a love for something and you want to make something that's like substantial to you or something that means something, do something that you love, because you won't get tired of doing stuff that you love. Stop being scared. I mean, I feel like majority of people are just scared, like, what if it doesn't work out?
Right.
Or you can build as many reasons as to why something won't work out, but get it kind of out of your head, because I don't know who said it. I want to say Michael Jordan, but not 100%. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Wayne Gretzky.
There we go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know how many shots he took, but he was right. You know what I'm
saying?
So that's my take on it.
So is there something that you, maybe during a game, maybe the game isn't going the way you would like it to, is there something that you tell, do you have any kind of mantra in your head, anything that you tell yourself to get yourself in the right headspace?
Yeah, it's crazy because up to when I was 14, like even when I was young, I played Pop Warner, and my dad used to remind me that, like, even if you make a good play, forget about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it'll help you build your confidence, but if you hang your hat on that one play, it's a false reality. You know what I'm saying? You're only as good as your next play. And if it doesn't go right, it's not the end of the world. But I kind of start wrapping my brain around, like, yeah, I had a good play or I had a good game, but like, what about the next one?
Mm.
And it'll also give you that constant drive or motivation to be better for the next one. Also, being a leader, I feel like, how can you make people around you better? You know what I'm saying? Not just yourself. I try to remind myself. I got a little sayings like that and little stuff.
That's great.
It's some worse things I say to myself to remind myself. But I don't think I can say them on camera, but I like that. I'm real hard on myself. And that's why when it comes to constructive criticism, I promise you there's nothing you can say to me that I haven't said to myself, probably like words.
How do you split your brain to think about football and fashion? Or do you? Is it all one thing in your head? Or are you able to like silo these different things that you're doing?
I feel like I have like compartments in my brain.
Okay.
Obviously, I'm crazy. We all know that. I mean, we all look crazy. But I have little sections in my brain marked off with, you know, allotted time. I always keep the main thing. I love football. I feel like it. If you love the game truly, it requires a level of respect and time that you put into it. Considering it's the off season, I'm just training right now, getting better for the next season. But when the season rolls around, that's when I kind of like eliminate all distractions and everything I worked on in the off season, fashion or anything. It kind of gets pushed to February. I also feel like, regardless if I play this game, I got more football behind me than I do in front of me, and that's just the nature of the game. I've been blessed up to this point to play, going on my 10th year.
Yeah,
10 years, almost a decade of doing this.
Yeah,
3 to 4 years. I'm going to still be 33, 34. A lot of life in front of me.
Yeah.
So considerably to have a passion and a love for other things outside of football, that's going to wake me up in the morning and say, I want to get this done. People just don't understand what it's like to do something for, I guess, your whole life And at one point it doesn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not gonna say this, but you know, Tom Brady retired and unretired. And
yeah,
like,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he has a certain level of love and appreciation for the game, and it's all he's done for X amount of years.
Yeah.
Not just the 20 years he's been playing. It's kind of hard to give up that dream that you've always had and start doing different things.
Yeah.
And 'cause nothing in life will fulfill you as much as your professional dream and the things you reach. I feel like it was important because I kind of had a little bit of experience with that in college when I broke my ankle. I ended up having surgery and I missed the rest of my season. I'm like, damn, like, what do I even like to do? When I start having more time to get to know myself and learn myself, I start understanding myself a little bit more emotionally too. And I just start saying like, well, what are my interests? What do I like? And that's when the fashion stuff start really start paying attention to it. And I start, you know, doing certain things to my clothes or doing certain things to my shoes. So I was fortunate enough to fall short or have some experience with not being able to do something I love. It was a moment when I kind of didn't feel invincible. Up to that point, you couldn't tell me anything.
Yeah.
But when I got hurt, I started realizing that I'm human, right, just like everybody else. So having some other interests was really important to me as I got older. And then in football, I kept the main thing until I made a substantial amount of money. Like, all right, you can be interested in a couple of other things. But until then, I was just locked in on ball.
I think you need to be a little bit more introspective. I don't think you look inward enough. I'm just going to put that out there. you know, one thing I did want to ask about, you know, when you're a professional athlete, you know, there's some degree of your life that someone's telling you, this is where you're going to live. Mm-hmm. This is when practice is. This is when you're going to go here. This is when you're going to go there. As opposed to entrepreneurship, which is like, do your thing, do what you want. Like, how does like having this regimented life and a sort of open book compare to each other?
I feel like they're parallel, because as much as freedom as you have in entrepreneurship, you're your own boss, but everybody answers to somebody.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, at the end of the day, to me, like, I give you an example, like, yeah, I work for myself, but I still got to report to the atelier. I still got to get things at a certain time. I still got to do X, Y, Z. So even if you're not directly, you know what I'm saying, answering nobody or somebody, employee, it's a give-take relationship in all you do. I feel like in football, where you're in a regiment, it's a give-take relationship. Like, I got to be here at a certain time to be a professional. I have to work hard. It's just part of the job. It's just some people rather work for themselves, and I appreciate it. I respect it, because nobody really truly wants to answer anybody. Everybody wants to do what they want to do when they want to do it. But I also have a mindset of they're sheep and they're shepherds. You know what I'm saying? Some people are supposed to follow. Some people are supposed to have a 9-to-5. Some people prefer it that way, actually.
Yeah.
It gives them less things to think about, you know what
right.
I'm saying? Working and, you know what I'm saying, doing things at a very high level for where they at. Some people say, I don't want to work for anybody. I want to work for myself. But honestly, I'll tell you right now, I feel like entrepreneurship is way harder.
Now we've got some questions sent in by small business owners. Okay. First question is, what's been the toughest problem you've faced in business, and how did you work through it?
As I touched on a little bit, it's probably the time portion. In the beginning, like falling short on time, like me thinking it's going to be instant, and it's not. It's a very thorough process that I have utmost respect and appreciation for, going to the atelier, seeing people work on the garments, making them by hand. And I was like, it takes a lot of hard work to make things turnkey, as much as I would like it to be snap your fingers and poof, a shirt is done.
Right.
I feel like it's an intricate process, and it's very tedious, and I respect them. And now I'm like, take your time, actually. I just want to see that it gets done right, and I want to make sure it's done right the first time. Measure twice, cut once method.
How do you teach yourself to be patient?
Oh, as everybody says, you need things to be patient. Like, things have to happen in your life for you to be patient about. Like, example, like me breaking my ankle and I'm feeling invincible, but then you ask God to teach you patience, and there you are.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to put yourself on the back burner, and you have to really, truly wait. I feel like the biggest teachers are challenges.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? When you're faced with a challenge and you're forced to learn the lesson.
Yeah,
not just learning the lesson, entrepreneurship 101. I'm talking about you got to fall on your face a little bit. You got to get dirty. You got to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and be like, all right, I got this. I can figure it out. But sometimes you got to fall on your face a couple of times. So that's how I really taught myself patience.
It's great advice. And man, does it suck in the moment. But you're right, for sure.
And it builds character. I feel like I'm a big guy on building character, as humbly as I can say it. I feel like falling on your face gets you, you gotta earn some stripes, you know what I'm saying? Not having the mentorship or not having that.
Yeah.
I feel like it's good to fall on your face a couple of times. Like in football, I got tackled hard multiple times as a kid, and I was faced with the challenge to be like, do I want to do this anymore? Got to a point where I'm like, all right, I can deal with it. I just got to avoid it, but I can deal with it.
What advice would you give to someone who has a day job and is looking to launch a side hustle?
Do something you love. You're looking for something lucrative. Do something you love because you'll put endless amount of time into it. You'll be invested. You know, when you're invested in something, I like to say, in any investment I have, I like to get in the bed with the people that's already in the bed. I don't like investing in something that somebody's not already invested in. I'm not saying it's not a great idea, but I trust people that'll get in the bed with me. So if it falls short, we both fall short. You know
right.
what I'm saying? But do things that you love. Like for me, like you make money off of doing things you love, and you'll have a layer of appreciation for it. Like I love doing this. So if it's a lot of money or a little bit of money,
right.
you still love doing it. And if you get halfway decent at anything in this world, it usually makes you a couple dollars here and there. So
right.
my advice is to do things that you love, do things that you have respect for. But if you love something and you truly respect it, you'll give it time, you'll give it attention, and you'll give it anything that it really asks you for in that moment or afterwards.
Okay, last question. How can partnerships or collaborations with other businesses or influencers drive growth and customer acquisition?
I feel like it's a new audience when people collaborate. People that aren't necessarily a fan of your brand could be a fan of the opposing brand or person that you mesh well with. And it gives people something to be excited about. You
right.
know what I'm saying? Maybe it's two of your favorite brands collab and it's like, damn, I can't wait to see what they come out with. I can't wait to see what magic happens. You know what I'm saying? As a consumer, you love seeing magic happens. And people love a story. When people collab and, you know, with influence and people like that, it's this day and age, it's like people are famous from being influencers. And I'm trying my hardest to be an influencer. I'm not that good at it, but I'm working at it. I just feel like you not only give people something to be excited about, but it puts them in this space of like being a kid again. Like, I remember waiting in the line for shoes for hours at a time or doing that kind of experience. I feel like when people collab, it kind of evokes those same emotions of, you know, kid like damn, I'm so excited. Or like,
yeah.
you know, like all woke up on Christmas one day and you had your favorite toy that you look forward to. Like just those same kind of emotions.
Yeah.
So I feel like it helps your brand too. And it's a double-edged sword when you collab with people because some brands stand alone greatly. Peanut butter and jelly's been peanut butter and jelly for a while. They haven't switched it up, haven't added too many different things. I just feel like the things that work well, they work well. And when you start adding things, they can go well or they can go south. So for me, it's a double-edged sword, you know, but we all like seeing good things happen when two things come together, you know, in my opinion.
Well, my opinion, I think you're pretty good at this.
Halfway decent.
I think things are going to go well for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Halfway decent. I told you in the beginning, I'm trying.